In Michigan, residents who appear in court face judges who rely on money from defendants to make their budgets work. A report out earlier this month reached the unanimous conclusion that this funding system and its inherent conflicts of interest is, quote, broken.
The question is, can Michigan get out in front of it and fix it before there's a crisis?
That is Ingham County District Judge Tom Boyd. He chairs the state's Trial Court Funding Commission, which issued the report. The fixes the commission recommends largely rely on lawmakers to sponsor and pass new legislation. But a new report from Harvard Law School suggests courts and judges don't need to wait for politicians to act. Mitali Negrecha is co-author of that report and is with us now. Mitali, let's start with this big picture. Why is it important for judges and courts to start making changes now rather than waiting for legislation?
You sort of suggested this in your introduction, but legislation can take time. So the recommendations in our report suggest that even within the discretion of the courts in most states, judges can do a lot to make sure that individuals who come before the court and get monetary sanctions are sentenced to proportionate sanctions and then don't face the spiral of consequences, such as additional fees and fines when they can't pay, driver's license revocations, incarceration, and consequences to their financial stability. And so what we argue in the paper is, again, that judges and courts have not only the discretion to do right, but really the responsibility to do right.
Can you tell us, how does Michigan compare with other states when it comes to having a court system that is fair for low-income people?
You know, it's very hard to make comparisons and sort of rank states in that way. But Michigan does have indications in the structure of its courts and its funding of those courts that suggest problems. So, for example, there is a lot of responsibility on local jurisdictions to fundraise and to allocate money to pay for courts. And that is one factor that we saw, for example, in Ferguson, Missouri, that led to the types of problems that I just spoke about.
And the report that you've co-authored focuses on proportionate financial sanctions. What does that mean? Explain that to us.
Yeah, so one of the things that we've seen across the country is that courts have started to agree that they should be looking at ability to pay up front. And what we're saying in this piece is that judges also need very concrete tools and clear guidelines about how much it is that someone can really afford to pay. So simply deciding that someone can pay $50 because it sounds like an affordable amount to the judge doesn't really work.
So just an example, I think the amount that that I might pay for a speeding ticket, that fine, based on the offense, it's a flat fine. Everybody pays the same amount. But you're saying courts should instead focus on creating penalties that are experienced equally.
Exactly. And I think the barriers to that are often a lack of clear guidelines, a lack of understanding of the experiences of poverty. You know, one of the open questions as Michigan moves forward with the recommendations in the report and continues to think about this is, you know, how is that ability to pay factored in so that poor people aren't paying for court costs?
What should courts look at? You actually kind of help lay out a way for courts to set proportionate financial sentences. What should they take into account when deciding what proportionate means for an individual?
Yeah, so they should start with the person's income. What they shouldn't start with and what really shouldn't come into play is speculation about how much the person could make or should make, and then a realistic calculation of that person's cost of living. After all that, you know, it's not that everything someone has left over should go to court fines. And so it should be some proportion of, you know, what that person has left after meeting their living expenses.
Mitali, how much latitude do judges have over fines and how much is set into law?
That really varies from state to state, but in most places, judges have a lot of discretion. What does happen is that judges may have that discretion but feel pressure from their peers to raise money or there's just been a culture of charging these amounts for so long, and I think unpacking that takes a shift in how it is that judges approach these cases. And so what we try to do in the report is set forward a framework for how we think courts should approach these cases, and it's really with a generosity towards the people who are in front of them to truly understand their circumstances.
You know, it's interesting. You also challenge judges to consider alternatives to payment that are proportional, like, hey, how about community service? And also to decouple probation and monitoring of fine payment. Talk about that a bit.
Sure. So one question is, what if the person has no money? You know, what's the court to do? And so I think there are a few answers to that. I think one is that a proportionate fine might actually be a sentence, a truly proportionate fine. And then we also talk about community service. And so what we sort of explain in the report is that community service may in fact be an option, an alternative sentence, but that some of the same problems can pop up if we don't think about community service deeply and make sure that the person's still able to fulfill their other obligations, to go to work, to pick up their kids, and that we work around those realities. The other part of what we talk about is that in many, many jurisdictions, probation supervision is used to monitor payment. So the court will sentence somebody to a certain amount of fines, and that person says that they can't pay that up front. And so they are then given a payment plan to pay over the course of a year. And probation supervision is used to make sure that that person is, in fact, paying those monthly payments. And supervision, you know, often has a kind of gotcha quality to it where, you know, someone slips up on something or someone avoids their supervision probation officer because they can't pay, and then all of a sudden they're in more trouble.
Sure. Like Pandora's box, in a sense, as you say, the disproportionate consequences of probation violations.
Exactly. And as we sort of say in the report, you know, for no other debt would you have this sort of spiral of consequences and monitoring.
Is there a risk here that we could wind up making it too easy on someone getting out of a fine? Does it lose that deterrence factor if, for example, for speeding, if the ticket you get and the fine is minuscule?
There are a few responses to that. So one, most states have a lot of outstanding fees and fines that aren't getting paid. So we're already in that situation where the money's not coming in because poor people are being charged way too much money. The other is that higher fines don't have deterrence value. You know, the research shows that, you know, to the extent that our goal is deterrence, it's a certainty of the sanction, not the severity of the sanction that deters. And so a payable fine is likely, you know, the same deterrent value and has a lot less of the negative consequences for someone's life than these higher fines. And I think the problem is that what's payable to a lot of people isn't payable to most people who end up in criminal courts. You know, I think where that some of that fear comes from, that the fine's not high enough, is probably because we don't understand these people's economic circumstances.
How hard will it be, do you think, to get American courts and American judges to change the way, quote, we've always done it and look at your recommendations and adopt them?
Every piece of this is probably being done somewhere. And what we've done is sort of pulled examples from across the country to create a whole. And I think once all of the things are done in one jurisdiction, you'd have something that looks a lot more proportionate and fair. But each piece of it isn't so radical. We've seen it in other places. And so, I mean, judges could do this starting tomorrow. And I think they will do some pieces of this starting tomorrow. And I think it'll be sort of a process of holding judges accountable to do all of it.
Mitali Negrecha is with the Criminal Justice Policy Program at Harvard Law School and co-author of the new report, Proportionate Financial Sanctions, Policy Prescriptions for Judicial Reform. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you again so much for having me.